Hey, y'all. Welcome to this episode of Rants and Randomness. I am Lovie Ajayi, your side-eye sorceress and wacky wordsmith. And this is my podcast where I'm talking about things I'm loving, things I'm side-eyeing, and having really good conversation with really good people. I'm here at Chicago Recording Company giving y'all the radio voice. And on this episode, if I sound weird, it's because I'm getting over a cough. So, you know, you guys tell me my voice is soothing. I might sound like a prepubescent teenage boy this episode. You're going to have to go along with it. Anywho, my feel good, I'm basically grasping for straws because there's very few things to feel good about right now. I had a hard time finding y'all one, but I'll talk about the comments that you've been sending me about my playlist. I am ranting about why the high road is overrated. Spotlighting Chicago Recording Company. Surprise! Hey, y'all. And my guest is Amanda Seals. So this is going to be a good show. So let's jump into it. All right, so I just have to be real. Like, it was really hard to find something that was like a feel good for this episode in terms of something warm and fuzzy that's happening in the world, because anything that was warm and fuzzy happened as a result of something terrible that happened before it. So, for example, the woman who called the cops on the 8-year-old who was selling water, the woman who we now call Permit Patty, well, the 8-year-old was selling water because she wanted to make save money to go to Disneyland. Somebody on Twitter found that out and actually bought her and her family 4 tickets to go to Disneyland. And there's a video of the little girl screaming in joy. So that made me feel good. But what came beforehand made me facepalm. So I'm not sure if it fully counts. But I'll take it. But I will say that you guys keep on sending me comments about my Afrobeats playlist. Somebody actually sent me a video of their daughter who was crawling to the playlist, to the music that I was playing, and she said the playlist is the boot camp soundtrack, the crawling boot camp soundtrack, and it was the cutest thing ever, so that was great. Somebody says the playlist has supernatural powers. BLC New York, she says, the playlist has me rocking all the way out on Wall Street. Great news from a friend came in as soon as I pressed play. I'm convinced that Lovie's energy via my headphones had something to do with it. I'ma take that. Thank you. And reading you guys' reviews on iTunes is always a good time for me. Rhoda20 said, I saw the TED Talk and so it began. 3 hours later, I'm subscribed to the podcast, following on Instagram, and preparing to order the book. Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Thank you, Rhoda. Welcome to the Love Nation. Bethy Beth New Orleans says, Lovie does not play. Well, actually, she is super playful and hilarious and has an innate knack for dropping deep knowledge in a way that is funny, inspiring, heartfelt, and authentic, all without condescension, pretension, or shaming. I'm a white woman who learned so much from her and her truly incredible cast of guests. I feel like I make new friends on every episode. All right, that's what I'm talking about. Somebody says their username is This Side Eye Sorceress Is It. This side eye sorceress is always on point. I love her. Her views are provocative, insightful, thought-provoking. I look forward to every session she drops. Lovie has a fan and supporter for life in me. I'm looking forward to seeing her at Essence. If you're listening to this episode, I hope you came to Essence Fest in New Orleans because I'll be there. So this episode is airing after that. But yes, indeed. If y'all see me in these streets, say what's up. Thank you for the reviews. Keep the reviews coming on iTunes. Your review might end up being read on the podcast, so come through. So my rant this week is about how the high road is overrated. I feel like people often put, like, ask folks to take the high road in situations where they're not obligated to take the high road, just in life in general. Because I feel like people put niceness over kindness. So the idea of taking the high road is that, like, when somebody accosts you in some way, it is your duty to be the bigger person all the time and respond better and respond in a way that's civil and be nice about it. And I have a problem with that because I feel like the high road and this insistence of us taking the high road is actually hurting us more than it's helping. You know, that's the one time I disagreed with Michelle Obama's when she said, when they go low, we go high. honestly, when people go low, sometimes we have to meet them there. Like, if you go low, I'm going to go gutter. And we find ourselves in certain situations that shows that this high road does not work. People are often raised to put harmony over justice. Like, people are raised to put civility and order over justice just because you're like, hey, be nicer. Say this thing nicer. But what I'm thinking is people have niceness and kindness messed up. So what I consider the difference is niceness is being able to say something that is positive, right? But kindness is doing things that are positive and putting people's humanity over anything else and being thoughtful and considerate about them. But what people prioritize is niceness. And I don't feel like there's room for that. I think about where we are as a country right now, where, for example, the Supreme Court just upheld the Muslim travel ban. And people are still talking about, hey, we should all be civil. And when we talk about people protesting, people get mad because they're like, well, it's not orderly how people protest. And then when people, half of the country is wishing for immigrants to be separated from like family members, and we're being told be civil about it. What is civility doing for us? What is this niceness doing? For me, it's one of those things where it's like hustling backwards. We're prioritizing the wrong things. If we can't put justice over niceness, what are we doing as a people? Like, where are we going to end up if we continue to just be like, you know, turn the other cheek when somebody harms you? That's my problem. The people who harm us are not the ones being told to be civil or being told to be nice or take the high road. It's always the person who's been victimized in some way who's told, you should take the high road, you should be civil, which for me annoys the crap out of me, because I'm just like, when somebody harms you, you don't owe them kindness or niceness. You owe them kindness in that this is a human being, so I'm not going to destroy you, but you don't owe them positive words. You don't owe them forgiveness. You don't owe them friendship. And what are we telling people when we tell them to constantly just appease people who harmed them? It means the person who did the wrongdoing is being let off the hook oftentimes. They're not being held accountable, all in the name of being civil. And that's just not okay, because I feel like we're going to be civil and we're going to civil our way into bondage. Here's the thing about like villains and just people who harm us in general. Usually when somebody does something to you that is not just disrespectful, but like harmful to you as a person, you're past the point of civility. This person isn't looking at you as a full human being. So being civil is the idea that you can change somebody's behavior or affect an outcome by being really nice about it. I just recently got mad because in this whole Trump administration thing, one of the most vocal people against Trump has been Representative Maxine Waters. And she's constantly been beating the drum on how what he's doing is not okay, how his xenophobia is not okay, his racism is not okay, his Islamophobia is not okay. She's being loud about it as she's been this member of Congress. So recently, she continued to talk about how Trump is terrible. Well, Nancy Pelosi then says we should be more uniting, essentially scolding Representative Waters, like Congresswoman Waters, about her comments against Donald Trump. And I'm just like, when will people realize the high road and civility is not going to save us? That is not how you change systems, by being civil to the people who are actively not looking at other people as full humans. You being nicer about how you're talking about Trump is not doing anything. That is, part of the problem is he's not being challenged. Part of the problem is Democrats is being told, be civil, be more civil about this government, everything that's happening. What is civility going to do? And how do people put civility at such a high level against justice? When you're demanding justice, the things that happen, how you demand justice should not be about how polite you ask for it. Because, I mean, nothing changes. Justice does not come just because you're begging for it. Justice does not come just because you're being nice about the other person who's not giving you justice. That's not how this works. So I don't understand this insistence on this high road that people want to take. Because when you are in a fight for your life, when you're in a fight for the world, when you're in a fight for just like people to have the rights that are basic, like, you know, the right to make their own choices about where to live, what religion to practice, what to say, you being civil is not a good way to do it. You don't civil your way to justice. So I want us to push ourselves past the idea that civility is the key. When we are in a fight, fights are not about politeness. I'm not saying we have to be assholes to everybody. I'm not saying we have to walk around being angry. I'm saying is when it's time for us to challenge systems and challenge people, how we say it should not nullify our messaging. And us being forced to be civil does not really do much, because when we are challenging something greater than us and systems and government, civility is not one of the tactics to getting what you want, to getting your rights back, to reversing harmful policies. It's not by being nice. So, yeah, I'm over the high road, and I think we just need to be truthful first. We can still be kind, but we do not have to be nice. Kindness is what makes you want to fight for people who are not you. You know what I mean? Like, I think people who are being kind are people who are insisting on being uncomfortable and taking themselves outside of their usual spaces to fight for other people who might not have the right to fight, the voice, the money, the stature, the positioning. That's kindness. Like, you're actually being considerate of other human beings by making sure you're doing what you have to do. The niceness of being like, just say it better, doesn't do it. So, yeah, we should take the high road when the other person is also willing to take the high road with you. Because if you're taking the high road and the other person's in the gutter, what are you doing? Where are you going to meet up? Like, how are you going to see what the other person's doing? So let's not die on the high road as opposed to, like, fighting in the gutter where the other person is. Take the fight wherever the other person is. So, yeah, and you don't have to be hateful. Like, I am not calling for people to be hateful. You can be challenging. Other people won't consider it civil because it ruffles their feathers. The moment somebody feels like their feathers are ruffled, all of a sudden you're not being civil, even though you didn't say anything insulting. So let's keep challenging people. Challenge yourself to be more truthful, to be more outspoken. Let not being more nice. What I'm not doing is the call to action of you should be nicer. No, you should be kinder, but you should speak louder. Use your voice and don't let people silence you or make you feel bad because they don't see what you're doing as civil. Even when what you're doing is civil, the person who wants to harm you still won't see it as civil. Colin Kaepernick knelt on one knee as the anthem was playing. That's pretty civil form of protest, yet people hated him for it. So that's why civility is subjective, and it is still not going to appease the people you want to appease if they don't want to be appeased. So do you. Let's all be better people. Let's all be kinder people and take the road that makes most sense, not always the high road. All right, so my spotlight, my randomness this week is to spotlight the Chicago Recording Company. Yeah! I'm surprising my sound engineer right now because he ain't know. So, Chicago Recording Company is where I've been recording this podcast since I started it. They partnered with me and was like, yeah, like, we want to see you make this thing happen, and what we can provide is this dope studio so you can sound all professional, not bootleg or janky. That's not how they put it, but that's how I'm putting it. And they've been such a great partner. Like, the team at the Chicago Recording Company where they record and they mix these episodes, like, Rose, Michael, Mark, have made doing this podcast a joy. Like, it's made it so good. For a long time, I wanted to do a podcast, but I didn't want to produce something that was just going to look like and sound like just amateurish. So that's why it took me a while. So getting a partner like Chicago Recording Company is literally the reason why this podcast is happening. And a lot of things, cool things happen here too. Like, they've done some of Chance the Rapper stuff, Lady Gaga stuff, Aaliyah stuff. I mean, legendary, okay? And being a Chicago girl, being able to partner with a Chicago company like this makes this podcast all the more, because I could have done this remotely with somebody else, or I could have decided to do this in my house. But I think when you find a dream team, you go ahead and stick to it. And whenever I come in, like, the team is always ready for me. You know what I do, too, when I come? I usually steal the snacks. Like, I'm partly the reason why they probably have Rice Krispies Treats now, because every time I leave, I'm going with 10. I'm that person. Sorry, Mike. I definitely be out here ransacking you guys' closet. And working with CRC has been so amazing that I actually decided to also do another project with CRC. And that project, by the time this episode is airing, you will know that me and my girl Yvonne Orji of Insecure and First Gen are launching a podcast called Jesus and Jollof. Me and Yvonne came into CRC and recorded the episodes of Jesus and Jollof here. And it's a podcast series where us, two proudly Nigerian women, two goat queens, are talking about the things we love, our stories, and life in general. And we called it Jesus and Jollof because those are two things we cannot do without. So when we walked in here to record the episodes of Mark, Mark didn't really know what Jollof was, but then we like showed him the way. And I knew we had something amazing because we had Mark cracking up. Like, so if you can actually make Mark laugh, you're doing something good. So I'm excited for Jesus and Jollof. Go ahead and listen to it. Subscribe to that podcast too. But yeah, so I am shouting out Chicago Recording Company because I'm excited that we did this partnership. Y'all tell me how good I sound every episode. It's partly because Mark makes the magic happen. So yeah, if you've been in Chicago and need to record any audio content, check out the folks at Chicago Recording Company, and then you can learn more by visiting their website, chicagorecording.com. And yeah, I'm going to keep bringing y'all the radio voice. So thanks, CRC. Yo, and now I want you to hear the trailer for my new show, which is coming out July 11th, tomorrow. It's called Jesus and Jollof, and it's my podcast with Yvonne Orji, my girl. We were almost called it Two Goat Queens. So enjoy and subscribe.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's your girl, Yvonne Orji.
Hey, it's Love You Jai.
And together we are Jesus and Jollof. Not that we're calling ourselves Jesus, but Jesus and Jollof are the two things we love the most.
We can't do without Jesus and Jollof. So our podcast, our new podcast, is called This, and we are hoping you join us for every episode. What will we be talking about, Yvonne?
We'll be talking about everything under the sun. I mean, if you're African, you can relate. If you want to be African, you can relate, because now it's cool to be African.
Because we went to Wakanda.
Hey, Wakanda, the Black Panther lives.
Wakanda happened.
Wakanda is really West Uganda. it's just West Africa, Uganda.
Just so you know, it's about time we did something together. So join us. We will be talking about life.
All things.
Life, being Nigerian, being African, being artists, being foolish goats.
In fact, we're the foolishest of all the goats.
The most foolish.
More and more foolish of goats.
So join us. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts and everywhere else that podcasts are. And yes.
And we'll also be talking about things we like, things we don't like, that make us mad.
We invite you. You don't have to be even African to listen to Jesus and Jollof.
You just have to be lovers of all things African.
Correct. In fact, we're wearing Ankara right now.
No, okay, we're not.
We're not.
You wanted to be blacker than black. What's the problem?
We're wearing it.
We're already black.
It's okay.
It's enough. Your blackness is enough. Hey, on Jesus and Jollof. Your blackness is enough. On Jesus and Jollof.
Yes.
Your blackness is enough. Yes. Hashtag it.
Okay, this is foolish already.
Follow us on all social media. I'm at Yvonne Orji. That's Yvonneorji. Get your mind out of gutter.
And I'm at Lovie, Luvvie, all over the interwebs.
Correct. Confound.
Yes.
Welcome to Jesus and Jollof. Grab a plate. I'm offering plates.
All right. It's going to be so good. Hope you subscribe to Jesus and Jollof wherever you get your podcasts, and on to my guest interview. Boom! Amanda, welcome to Rant and Randomness.
Hello, loving! We did it.
We did it. We made it happen, yo.
I'm very proud of us.
I am, too.
Really am.
From text to actually making it happen, because look, two people who are constantly on the move all the time, trying to nail us down is like trying to pin down a cloud.
Yes, exactly. Because we be moving.
We be moving.
The skies.
But let me give people your skies. Let me give people this epic bio of yours. So comedian, actress, writer, producer, and more, Amanda Seales doesn't just make you laugh, she makes change. With an uncanny knack for serious topics, for taking serious topics with humor, making them relatable and interesting, she combines intellectual wit, exuberant silliness. I love the fact that exuberant is in your bio. And a pop culture obsession. To create her unique style of smart, funny content for the stage and screens, along with performing stand-up across the globe and touring colleges doing comedic lectures on everything from sexism to diversity to black pop culture, she's a series regular as Tiffany on HBO's Insecure and has performed stand-up on Late Night with Seth Meyers and opened for Chris Rock. She is the creator and host of hit comedy show Smart, Funny, and Black, and she speaks truth to change via her wildly popular Instagram and weekly podcast, Small Doses. Yeah, yes. Okay, slight work.
You gassing me.
So, like, when I read all of that, I'm always curious, like, what did you want to do when you were growing up?
When I was growing up, I really just wanted to do. It's funny that you ask it in that way because that's literally, I just wanted to do things and nothing has changed. Like when people ask me like, oh, what's like your ultimate goal? Is it to be Oprah? You know, is it to own a network? You know, is it to live on a remote island and teach yoga? it's like, no, my ultimate goal is just, I mean, is options. So it could be all of the above. You know what I'm saying? I just love the idea of having the freedom to let my creativity run wild. And I have so many ideas, you know, all the time. And it's just like, you just want to be able to execute and make things that make people better and that make the world better for people in the best, in the biggest way possible, right? So I wanted to, originally it was like, oh, I want to be a pediatrician. Then it was like, oh, I want to be the first black female president of the United States of America, obviously. And then I was like, I want to be an actress. And that was it for a long time. Like, I want to be an actress. I want to be an actress. I want to be an actress. But once I moved to school and went to SUNY Purchase in New York for undergrad and then Columbia for grad, like, I just got exposed to, you know, hip-hop and to spoken word and to all types of just expressions of the arts while going to an art school that it really just broadened my mind in terms of, like, oh, I can do all kinds of different things. And once I transitioned to comedy, it became the through line. And I just have still been fortunate enough to, like, start really growing that.
You're such an immigrant kid. You talking about some, I want to be a pediatrician. That is, like, part of our checklist. Like, immigrant kid, pediatrician, doctor. Yes. Yes, done.
Yes. Absolutely.
Your family's from Granada.
And you know my mother was a nurse, so.
Oh, girl, yes. You had to.
Yes. Were you about to say Granada, like a true American?
You know, I'm American sometimes, Nigerian other times. Granada.
I heard the other times.
The other times.
Grenada. Granada is a town in Spain. You try and buy a ticket to Granada, you will not end up in the land of nutmeg.
So Granada's... why am I having a hard time saying Grenada? Grenada is the land of nutmeg?
Yes, Grenada is the Isle of Spice. We, at one point, were the number one exporters of spice, so it's everything from nutmeg to mace to clove to cinnamon, etc. And we were known for having a huge amount of nutmeg on our island, so much so that we literally have a nutmeg on our flag. And,
wow.
You know, with differences in trade deals and with the Hurricane Ivan in 2005 really, like, completely obliterated our nutmeg. Our nutmeg
wow.
yield, and so we've been rebuilding since then. I mean, we're back in action, and we have, like, cocoa fields, and we have chocolate. But we're a little island with big dreams, eh? A little island with big dreams. Big, actually, not even dreams, because we'd be actualizing shit. We're a
yes.
little island with big talent.
Yes. See, I just love it. Just small but mighty.
Yes, exactly.
Small but mighty. And recently you were talking about, like, how people sometimes think you're multiracial.
Ugh.
And how that basically makes you upset. Talk about that.
It just makes me upset because it's not true.
Right.
And because that's really the bottom line. Like, it's not even that I have any, like, side eye to people who are biracial. I mean, that would be foolish. It's just simply that it's not true. And any time that people do assume that, it's usually done to undermine the validity of my voice as a black woman.
Mm.
So, you know, that's the juxtaposition. It's never just like, oh, I thought you were biracial. It's like, well, I mean, you biracial, so why are you talking? You know what I mean? And like, and now it's even become where it's not even about being biracial. Like, I just have people on my timeline who will be like, you know, how dare you speak about the Black experience when you're light-skinned? And I'm like, is this really? You know? Yeah. What? That's like a, like, go into a couple of my latest posts. Like, that's been the latest. And I'm like, at this point, I feel like if you say shit like that, like, you're coming from a place of self-hatred, which is unfortunate because that was implanted in you by a colonialist and a, you know, a racist, you know, structure. But also, you just don't know history. Like, that's just like a lack of knowledge of history, whether you're going to go all the way back to, you know, the fact that, like, a number of us have lighter shades simply because we were, you know, the descendants of slaves who were raped. Or the fact that at the end of the day, it's like, we've had a number of individuals who have been at the forefronts of, like, movements in revolution in this country for Black people that were of the same shade. Like, so...
That's what I'm saying.
Is Malcolm X, is Huey P. Newton, and Erica Hudgens, all of them, they're just, like, irrelevant? Like, they're... Because they were light-skinned? Get the hell out of here, man. Stop feeding into the fuckery, please.
We got to do it.
Stop.
I want to know more about your background. So you were born in the U.S., but your parents are both your parents from Grenada. What is the struggle that I am having?
My father is irrelevant, but he is from Boston.
First of all, you have no chill. You have no chill. No chill whatsoever.
You know, I thank him for the chromosome. What's up? You know, I thank him for my booty because I get mine from him. My mother has no ass at all. So, you know, and I thank him for my sisters and my brothers because they're cool. But otherwise, you know, it's me and my mom. My mom is from Grenada. I've been going to Grenada all my life. I have citizenship in Grenada. I was raised in a West Indian household, but went to school with American sensibilities. So I got the best of both worlds, you know?
Yes. Were you going, because for the Nigerian experience, ours is we'd bring Nigerian food to school. Did you ever have to bring?
You know what? I really didn't bring West Indian food to school. I was actually the opposite. My lunches were coveted and stolen all my life, like, because they were so just bananas. Like, my mother is the queen of, like, little finding, like, cute little snacks. Like, when goldfish had, like, containers that looked like a goldfish, you got goldfish in a goldfish. Like, I was the first one at school with that. There was a point where I literally had to tell my mom, like, I need you to put more nourishment in my lunch because you're giving me too much candy. Because she just likes the cool, cute shit. Like, you know, Pez dispensers, and then Sweet Tart had these, like, little cool dispensers.
Ooh,
so,
I,
like, she would just be putting these, like, mechanisms in my lunch. And it was like, I need actual food. And she's like, oh, yeah, yeah, true.
She made you the envy of the kids. Meanwhile, you're over here like, I need carbs and vegetables.
I need sustenance. Yes. Like, I remember people, like, stealing my Cadbury eggs at lunch. Like, and I went to, when I went to high school, like, I packed my lunch all through school. And literally, like, for people's birthday, what they would get is a Netty lunch. My mother's name is Netty. So, like, that was the gift. Like, for people's birthday, like, other people would bring flowers or, like, balloons and shit. I would bring a Netty lunch. And that's when you were like, yes, we're elevating. Because my mom, like, so once I gave her the note of I need nourishment, she was like, oh, okay, that's what you want? All right. So my lunches became just like sushi. Like, I would have, like, it would be like, before hummus was popping, I had hummus in my lunch, you know?
Oh, you was a lunch pioneer.
Yes, I was a maverick of lunches. Listen, I really feel like, you know, that's like the latest, that's like the next venture for, like, my mom and her retirement. Like, we should, like, do Netty lunches, which are, like, her version of Lunchables. And it's just, like, organic and fun for kids. But it's also, like, really, like, interesting. It comes with, like, a Black History Month fact every day of the year.
Super Black, because you got to make it smart, funny, and Black. Like, because
yeah,
that's how
yeah,
you rock.
Just casual, you know? Like, Hannah's at lunch, like, with Megan and Madison. And she's like, did you know that W.E.B. Du Bois was the first Black man to graduate from Harvard University with a PhD?
Teach the babies at lunch.
Teach the babies at lunch, yeah.
Teach the babies. So as you went to be an actress, did your mom support it?
Yeah, you know, I come from a very, like, musical family. Like, even though, well, very artsy family, I should say. Even though, like, everybody, because they are West Indian, like, got real jobs, quote unquote. Like, it was not without, like, having a band at the same time. I mean, my uncle is a judge in Grenada and has, like, a band. And, like, yes. My other uncle is, like, a full-on, like, financial advisor, but, like, can play Elton John under the table.
Yes.
Like, on piano. And, like, my grandma could sing, and my grandfather played guitar. Like, we're, like, and, like, my mom, she's not, like, talented in terms of playing an instrument, but, like, in another, if she had been born in another place, like, she would have been an A&R. Like, she could have A&R'd the Beatles albums. Like, she's, like, she knows, like, music. Like, one thing they always say about the Seals family is we can always tell a wrong note. So, like, we're always the one that's, like, ooh, pitchy. And so that's, like, to this day. Like, me watching
Do you
BT
watch the
Awards
BT Wars
like,
with them?
Ah, my God! Jinx! Look at us! Jinx!
Because I was watching the BT Awards, and I was like, ooh, yeah.
There were some struggles. Yeah. There were some struggles. Don't let me not like you and you off pitch. Ugh, I can't even deal with you. Like, no, my mom was very supportive. I mean, I've always been very responsible by myself, you know? So, like, even though I was heavily in the arts, like, I was still managing my business with my grades. Like, I was never on some, like, I don't care about school. I was very into school. I was very about, like, excellence on the academic scale. So there was no reason for her to kind of come for me, you know what I mean? Like, because I wasn't neglecting my, like, student responsibilities as every immigrant child is supposed to do.
Right.
So, you know, I was on top of that. But then at the same time, I was in theater and I started working in television when I was 8. So I've been SAG since 94. And I think that for her, it was more so I was about to quit school my freshman year of college because I had a mishap my sophomore year of college because I had a situation with the conservatory and I was like, I'm just going to go to New York and get an apartment. I'm going to go to Uta Hagen and Stella Adler. And my mom was just like, I think that scared her. Like the idea of me like going to New York to live and like take acting classes and become this great actress. She was like,
about that. Mm-hmm.
But you know, once I got over that and I created my own major and I figured out like, you know, that there was another path. I think she's never really been on some, like, I don't want you to be an artist. She's always just been on some, I want you to be realistic. Now, her imparting of that wisdom has not always been done in the kindest
because
way.
Immigrant mamas don't know how.
Immigrant moms, they just yell.
They yell. Yelling is their love language. It's one of their love languages.
It's either yelling or very, like, very quiet, pointed language. Mm. And you're just like, I don't like it. I don't like this.
Like, you're like, this doesn't feel good or warm and fuzzy.
It doesn't feel compassionate at all. There's no compassion here. Yeah.
See, so you mentioned you were on a show when you were 8. My Brother and Me on Nickelodeon?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Is there like a throwback?
Well, actually, that was when I was 12.
Oh, My Brother and Me was when you were 12. Okay.
Yeah, I started actually, like, doing little commercials for Nickelodeon, and then I was, like, a dancer at Disney when I was 8 in front of the castle for the Sparkling Christmas Spectacular. Ironically, also the first place I ever experienced racism. So, wow. You know, I always say, Orlando, people think Orlando isn't racist because we're not, like, Mississippi racist, where it's like, fuck you, nigger, get out of here. But, however, we are... Fuck you, nigger, get out of here. Racist. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that was, wow. So what did that experience do? So you were born in Orlando? You were raised in Orlando?
I was born in L.A. I lived in Inglewood in L.A. until I was 8. And then I moved to Orlando, and I was raised there until high school was done. So I was 18. Then I went to college in New York, and I lived in New York until 2015. And then I moved back to L.A., back home. LA, I mean, that experience was just like, it was the actualization of something. Like, I mean, my mom basically woke up one morning and was like, hey, do you want to go to this audition that I saw in the newspaper? And I was like, you just want me to go for you. And she's like, what are you talking about? You got that off a movie. Let's go. So, like, you know, we went and it was like so many kids. It was like 1,500 kids. And they were just narrowing it down. Then I ended up like getting it, and they narrowed it down to 5 boys and 5 girls from 1,500, and it was like, okay. And so from being in that, my mom just observed like what other parents were doing, you know, with the headshots and the resumes and, you know, just kind of like took in information and then went from there. But it was never like anyone like held our hand through this or held her hand or nobody like spotted me in a Target and was like, this little woman is a star. Like it was never that type of situation. And so, you know, it's always been that the arts will just like the business of the arts has always been separate for me from the arts. And I think that's what has kept me sane and allowed mm-hmm. me not to become like a crazy child actor, but also not to lose my mind on the path of being an adult creative because...
Yo, that's some real stuff. Like, the struggles are real and you're somebody who tries to be transparent.
Oh, we're going to get into that.
Look, mm-hmm. okay, the struggles are real. Like, what is the biggest misconception people have about you and your work?
I think the biggest misconception that people have about me and my work is that, like, I've been getting new misconceptions.
Okay.
So I've been getting misconceptions like, she's a fraud.
What?
And I'm like, on what grounds? Like, show me the receipts. I'm always down for a good receipt display, you know? So show me the receipts and I'll show you the truth, you know? But like, I mean, if anybody has known me, like I put up a note that I had written in my journal entry that I had written to my fourth grade teacher. I put it up on my Instagram the other day where I said to her, Miss Tellis, you would have been my first and only black teacher at Palm Lake Elementary School, and now you're leaving. Mm. Because she was leaving after our first 2 weeks of fourth grade. And it's like, so I was 10 and about this, okay? Like, right. You know, like I have a picture with me and Alano Miller who played Kato on Underground, like in 1996. I'm like throwing up a black power fist. And my master's robe literally says a master's in revolution on the back of it because I painted that onto the back of it. So
people think you're as in like the wokeness. They think the wokeness. Oh wow. Okay.
And I'm like, nah. Then someone else said the other day, like that I'm a homophobe, and I was like, show me the math. Add it up for me, please. So I just, you know, those types of things are always kind of wild to me. I think what's actually dope is that I never really get people being like, oh, you're just saying things for shock value. Like the one thing that people do grasp is like, I mean, aside from these idiots saying I'm a fraud, like people may say like that I'm too crass or that I'm too direct or, you know, they may say like, oh, she's condescending, but they never say I'm disingenuous. When they are upset at me. Like the fraud thing is some new shit that I feel like that's just some hotep, no-tep BS. But for the most part, it's always been about like you're just too, and then fill in the blank.
So how do you separate the trolls from constructive criticism?
Because constructive criticism is actually like rooted in fact. And the reality is that there's constructive criticism that people can give you from the outside source. I'm not doubting that. But I think what a lot of people don't understand is like when you are on a public forum, I can't take in everybody's criticism, whether it's constructive or not.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just too much coming at you. Like that's why I have a circle that is not, I don't have a circle of yes people around me. You know, I have people mm-hmm. that will give me constructive criticism and that are trusted. So I think people get very frustrated even when they give constructive criticism in a public setting on Instagram or Twitter, et cetera, because, you know, if I'm not receptive to it, because they think like, well, I'm just trying to help you. And it's like, fair enough, but I don't know you. Mm. And I think that a lot of times people give what they think is constructive criticism, but it is in a vacuum. Like it doesn't have... You haven't had a conversation with me. So you're basing your criticism based on an outside rendering. Like people love to be like, oh, you know, you really shouldn't respond to trolls. You really shouldn't respond to negative commentary. You know, you're letting negative things in. That's constructive criticism. I think that comes from a good place.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's like it's without the context of why I do that. You know, I respond to certain people because I want to show that I know that there's other people that think this, and I'm giving a response for all of those people. I also want to show that, like, you can respond to people who, you know, speak at you negatively, et cetera, in a way that doesn't necessarily diminish your voice and that doesn't make you, like, look crazy. You don't have to curse them out. And I'm really about, like, just encouraging people to be more outspoken, you know, in a real way. Because we have a lot of people that are outspoken right now who know nothing. Like, I feel like there's... You know what I mean? Like, there's just too many people that are speaking up with no information. The loudest folks are racists and idiots.
Right.
They're the loudest.
Right.
So, like, you have to drown them out, you know, with facts and with context and with intellect. So I really, like, respond to folks a lot of times to show, like, this is what you do to drown out an idiot.
the tutorial on how to drown out idiots. I do also disagree with people who are like, never give it any attention. No, some things need to be addressed because...
Some things need to be addressed.
People will have you messed up.
Yes. People will have you messed up. That's it. Like, people would... Like, it's just, you know, it's the classic, you know... it's the classic black phrase, like, you got me fucked up. Like, that's not... It's just not a thing that I'm allowing. And, you know, I think for the most part, people just don't understand what it's like to have people giving you their opinion of you all day. The other thing is wild is, like, when someone gets mad that you haven't, like, thanked them personally for giving you a compliment.
Oh, you know, wow. That happens to you?
Oh, my God. Someone on my Instagram the other day was like, you know, how dare you respond to someone who said that you were a homophobic person, but yet you couldn't respond to me when I said you look beautiful?
Ooh. Wow.
And it's just like, and I, you know, then I got hot and I was like, what do you need from me? Like, why? Like, what? Thank you. But also, like, don't give a compliment if you're only giving it to get the response. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're on an Instagram platform. I don't even know your face. I don't know your name. Like, why do you expect all that from me? This person is getting a response because they are spouting on a public platform a falsehood about me.
Right.
You know, you telling me I'm pretty, that's not a falsehood. That's the facts. Uh-uh. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. Okay, let them know, okay?
Wait, my producer just looked at me like, oh, my God, I can't believe she just said that.
I'm glad you said that. I'm so glad you said that.
Own your beauty, Rebex. Own it.
Own your dopeness. That's the question. Look, my last episode had Bozema St. John, and I asked her the question of, like, do you have imposter syndrome? And she was like, no. Yeah. So I just love when I hear
women. I only have it at weddings.
Wait, at weddings? Why weddings?
Because I be feeling like I'm friends with the person, but I don't know, like, their whole family. And then their whole family be looking at you like, what are you here for? Like, why are you here? Like, what are you here doing? And I'm just like, I don't like this. I really don't. I don't like weddings, yo.
Wait, really?
I don't think I'm getting married either. Yeah.
No, tell me more. I need to hear more about this. What happened? Why have you written up weddings and marriage?
It's not even like a written off thing. It's just like I'm very decisive. And I kind of like when I don't like something, I just realize like, oh, I don't have to do that. Like, I remember the day that I realized that I don't like roller coasters. It was so freeing that I could just sit with the bags happily. You know, like, I'm going to just sit with the bags and eat my churro and y'all can ride. And I'm here and it's fine, you know.
Okay.
I'm still enjoying the company of everyone at Six Flags, but I'm not putting my life in danger. And
you
it's
know what?
Great.
You know what? That was, so last year I went to Six Flags with my friends and I decided, I was like, you know what? I'm going to give roller coasters another chance. I'm going to go and be a trooper. Girl, by the second roller coaster, I was like, oh, all right, I will be the bag holder now. Thank you, guys.
I'm holding the bag.
I will see you when you get back down looking shell-shocked. I'm okay right now.
I'm just good. I just don't like roller coasters, and it's fine. And it's like I realize that I don't like weddings. For a long time, I would Freudian slip and call weddings funerals. There's something to be said for that.
Oh, no.
Like, I'm saying, like, forever I do this.
So, and wait, what is your least favorite part about weddings? What is the part that makes you cringe?
Their weddings feel like I am it feels like voyeurism into an intimacy that I don't feel like I should have access to in somebody else's exchange. And I feel like, you know, that's the opposite of how people feel like weddings. They're like, we're sharing our intimacy in front of everybody, and that is what we're doing. And there's a performative aspect to it that just makes me cringe. And for me, you know, and it's like, do you? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's tradition. I feel like everybody has a right to make their choice and how they want to be a part of tradition and how they want to carry things forth. But I've just recently come to this epiphany, and of course this may change, but I'm not a traditional person. And the same way I made up my own major in college, I'm gonna make up my own marriage.
What was your major that you made up?
Black Studies with a concentration in the visual and performing arts. They did not have that in existence. They didn't have a Black Studies major at Cerny Purchase. And I made it up.
Nice.
And I had to, like, put together the curriculum, and I had to get, you know, the schools of thought to sign off on it, et cetera. And it's like, when I think about it, I'm like, you know what? That's basically how my marriage is probably going to be. It's like, you know, just it's a different setup for a different broad.
Hey, people got to know what works for them, and that's important. It's like when couples do the vows to turn off the mic.
Yes, the vows. Oh my God, Levy, the vows. It's like, yeah. I went to a wedding recently and it was for my TV husband. So I went to see my TV husband get actually married. And because of where we were outside and it was like by the ocean, so the water was kind of loud. Like, I couldn't hear them say their vows. And it was so comforting. Like, it really was. And it was like, because I don't need to be in that, you know? Like, I feel like if I'm going to marry somebody, first of all, I'm not involving the government in my situation. Like, I'm just like, I don't need to do that. Secondly, I feel like me and that person can go and, like, do that to each other. And, mm-hmm. like, that's our shit. We okay. have made that commitment to each other. We have our own thing. And then we invite everybody come through. And it's like, hey, we bought property together. Come celebrate. Like, that's essentially what I see happening. Dope. I know this sounds crazy to people listening because they're like, what? What are you talking about? But that's what making your own path sounds like to a lot of people. Because crazy, I mean, let's be real, like crazy means irrational. And for right. a lot of people, thinking outside of the box is irrational because it's not safe.
That's deep. Ooh, that's deep. Okay. Yes. I'm only like, okay, tell me something. You better preach. Yes. I mean, you've been creating your own way, you know, for a long time. The fact that you created your own major, girl, you clearly weren't going to be the person sitting in an office and be happy about it.
No. Mm-mm.
And you've created your own comedy show called Smart, Funny, and Black, which is currently touring across the country. First of all, I want you to let people know, what is Smart, Funny, and Black?
Smart, Funny, and Black is a live Black culture comedy game show experience. Mm-hmm. It's not just a show. It's an experience. It's basically, you know, we school you on Black history and we take Black culture to church. It is with a live band. I have two guests that we call Blackspurts come on stage that everyone knows, and they compete in games that test their knowledge of Black culture, Black history, and the Black experience. I'm the host. The audience is our third contestant because they're liver than the 106 and Park audience. And it really is, at the end of the day, a safe space to talk about, celebrate, and critique Black culture. And we don't have anything like that right now. And we haven't had anything like that for a while since Black, you know, since Def Comedy Jam and, you know, In Living Color and The Chappelle Show. And so I created this live space because I also feel like it's really important that we have like human to human connection and not just, you know, a digital or TV component. So Smart, Funny, and Black is now going to be on tour with the Lituation 101 tour, July 30th through August 14th. We have sold out 4 shows in New York. We sold out our 2 shows in Philadelphia. We sold out our show in LA. We sold out our 2 shows in Atlanta.
Hey.
And we have sold out our first show in Chicago. We added a second show. We sold out our first show in Dallas and added a second show. And we have shows in St. Louis, Detroit, and New Orleans, and Houston. Y'all got to step up. St. Louis, Detroit, New Orleans, and Houston. What's really good? You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. They have been selling tickets. I'm not saying that we have like an empty house. But my goal is to sell out every show on this tour.
Yes.
And every city that we go to, we have the opportunity to add a second show. So once we sell out that first show, we are able to add a second show. And I think that it's important that we do this show as much as possible if we have the time to in that city. You know, especially like St. Louis. We are in St. Louis on August 9th, which is the 4-year anniversary of the untimely passing of Mike Brown, which led, of course, to the creation of Black Lives Matter and the Ferguson protests, etc. So it is a very seminal time and moment for us to be there celebrating Black culture and celebrating Black history and celebrating the Black experience in a town where that has been attempted to be suppressed forever. You know, you look at the history of St. Louis and just its involvement in slavery and the slave trade, and it's like, yo, they was on some whole other shit.
Yeah.
So it's this show, you know, is more than just a comedy show. You know, this is a show that is also about identity and also about, you know, claiming of self-knowledge and perspective and pride. And we will also be having master classes in whatever cities we are able to have time. We're going to have free master classes that speak to comedy and performance in the African-American space.
Yo, Andara, somebody dope is on your Chicago stop. Who is that?
Yes, and yes. Levy will be one of our Blackspurts at our Chicago stop.
I have to study.
I'm so excited.
I have to
like,
study.
It's gonna
like,
be turned.
Like, what do you recommend I study? Because I can't be showing up.
You don't have to study. You really, really don't. Like, you really don't have to study. Because the best part is the improv of it all. And also the learning. I mean, it's great when folks don't know on stage and we teach and we have the audience. They know, the audience always know the answers. But you can get your tickets. Get your tickets at smartfunnyandblack.com. And if after all of this you're still like, I don't know what this is, make sure when you go to smartfunnyandblack.com, go to videos and you can check out our YouTube page. And we post new videos every week that are from the show. And, you know, we just got some things up our sleeve. You can get Smart, Funny, and Black merch. We'll have the podcast soon. Like, it's a movement. I know that sounds cliche, but it really is.
I am excited to be joining the tour, and I hope everything's going to sell out. It's all going to sell out. So I'm excited for when you make that announcement.
Yes, now, put that in the ether.
Okay, come on, universe. You hear us. So you got that, and of course, like, Insecure Season 3 is popping up. Yo, as you're doing all of this stuff, right, what are you doing to self-care? Like, what's your self-care routine? What is this thing that that keeps you upright?
I would say for self-care, like, there's a couple things. One, like, I have a really good circle around me of folks that allow me to vent and get my ideas out and get my frustrations out. So I don't feel like I'm having to, like, kind of hold stress in and kind of pretend like I'm keeping it together. It's like, nah, I don't really got to do that. And, you know, just having a solid team that actually, like, is as gung-ho as you are is actually very helpful in self-care, because you don't feel like you're having to, like, exert and carry the burden and stress of other people's inefficiencies. I also give myself time to chill. You know, like, I'm not saying that I'm always on point with my time management, because sometimes I really do have to, like, just not do shit. And that does make certain things have to, like, get rushed later. But it's just, like, necessary, man. Like, you got to take time to go and see Solo because it's out. You know what I mean? Like, you got to take time to, like, go to the beach if it's beach day. Like, I still, at the very least, will, like, go and sit by the pool and try and write by the pool. You know, like, it's just these little things that seem kind of like, oh, I'm taking away from my work. It's like but they are the necessity to keep you doing good work, you know? And I also just incredibly, I've become incredibly, like, specific in terms of not allowing there to be any fuckboyness in my space.
Yes!
And that has been, like, an integral part of my self-care. Just not settling or accepting fuckboy behavior. And if you are dealing with somebody who is not a fuckboy, then you're able to, like, at least impart to them, like, hey, I prefer this or I don't like this. And they will be responsive. Because I know people always ask, like, how can you tell a fuckboy? You can tell a fuckboy by how they respond to you being like, this is fuckboyish, you know? And if you say to someone, like, hey, like, I don't like this behavior, and they dismiss you or they try and manipulate you out of believing that it's what it is, 9 times out of 10, they're a fuckboy. If they hear you and they're like, okay, and then you can see, like, active attempts to at least, you know, change the behavior, then, you know, that's not fuckboyness. And I think that we get so used to kind of settling for just, like, basic shit, and it's like you don't want to have to ask, and it feels like self-care to not ask. It feels like self-care to not challenge people on how they treat you, because you're like, oh, like, I'm preserving my energy. And it's like, trust me, they're draining it in other ways.
Yo, that is major keys right there.
So I've just had to kind of impart all those three things on my regular daily, like, basis and stick with it. And it's been actually yielding, like, really positive results in terms of just, like, my output and what people are bringing to me.
Yo, Amanda, thank you for joining me on Rant and Randomness. This has been a dope episode, yo.
Yes. I mean, we're doing big things.
We're doing big things. And for Rant and Randomness, y'all, look, me and Amanda decided to do a crossover episode. So if you're listening to this right now, after this, go find Amanda's podcast, Small Doses, because I'm on there, and she's interviewing me, and we talk on all the things. So, yeah, I love the crossover. Yeah. Shout out to you, girl.
Shout out to you, boo.
Hey. Yo, shout out to Amanda Seals for joining me, and y'all can follow her on social media. She's Amanda Seals everywhere. That's AmandaSeales. Also, check out her websites, AmandaSeals.com and SmartFunnyAndBlack.com, to stay in the loop on upcoming shows that she's having. And come to the Chicago one, because I'll be there. Much love to Chicago Recording Company for partnering with me on this. Subscribe to Rant and Randomness everywhere where you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all that. And please rate it, because if you leave a comment, you might get featured on this show. So go ahead, let me know your thoughts, drop these good words. Follow the podcast on social media. It's Twitter is at Rants Randomness, no and. On Instagram, it's at Rants and Randomness. So you can always contact me with your thoughts, with any questions that you have at loveyrants@gmail.com. That's loveyrants@gmail.com. Go ahead and send your questions. Let's keep in touch, all right? Let's interact. The podcast is going on a short summer break for the next 4 weeks so we can reset and come back bigger and better for you. AKA, I'm being lazy because it's summertime, so I'm going to be out here just in these streets. But you can always catch... I'll still be on social media because that's where I be at. In the meantime, check out past episodes you might have missed. Who knows? Like, we might just have another bonus episode for you during the break. No promises, but just keep your eye... This is why you got to subscribe, because if you subscribe, it'll pop up in your phone if I decide to drop a surprise, all right? And also, go ahead and share this podcast. If you're loving this podcast, tell your friends to listen to it, you know what I mean? Pass it along on social media. People will thank you for it, for putting them on to this dopeness, you know what I mean? Go ahead and do that. But yeah, so from all of us on the Rants and Randomness team, thank you for the support, and we'll catch you in August, okay? August, we're going to be here. But in the meantime, there's 11 episodes to catch up on, so go ahead and listen to those. And as always, follow me on social media. I am at Lovey everywhere, okay? And see you on the next episode.